That means it's home.
Committee will come to order. Please take the roll.
Senator Dockstetter.
Accused.
Senator Hastert.
Here.
Senator Meyer.
Here.
Senator Perkins.
Accused.
Representative Burkhart.
Here.
Representative Escobel.
Here.
Representative Boniz.
Accused.
Representative Nicholas.
Here.
Representative Stubson.
Accused.
Representative Wallace.
Accused.
Co-Chairman Harshman.
Here.
Chairman Bevout.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. According to my schedule, Office of Administrative Hearings. Deborah, welcome. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Deb Bommer, and I'm the Director of the Office of Administrative Hearings. And with me today is Lynn Krantz. She's the Office Manager for the Office of Administrative Hearings. I've been with the office going on, this is my 17th year, and Lynn has been with the office for 22 years. The Office of Administrative Hearings conducts contested case hearings statewide in disputes between state agencies and Wyoming citizens. And I guess I need to qualify state agencies for purposes of this meeting today because recently, as of July 1, 2012, with the Teacher Accountability Act, we are also hearing local school district cases for teacher terminations and suspensions and contract non-renewals. So with that, what we do, we're not generally funded. We're funded by the Department of Workforce Services at 55% and the Department of Transportation at 45%. And we're statutorily required to hear all the cases sent to us from the Department of Transportation and the Department of Workforce Services. Those include workers' compensation cases. Last year, 642 cases came from the Workers' Compensation Division and also includes DUI cases. Last year, we had 1,223 DUI cases pass through the office. In addition to that, then we hear all state agency cases. Those include any boards or commissions, the Industrial Siting Council, for instance, the Board of Nursing, the list goes on, and I have listed those out in our annual report as well as in the, I think, the first pages of the budget. In addition to myself, I have five full-time hearing examiners in the Cheyenne office, and I have five contract hearing examiners currently located around the state to help with that caseload. All of our decisions must be reduced to findings of fact and conclusions of law. Those have become quite complicated, and over the years they have evolved into opinions that range anywhere from 20 pages to 70 pages. In terms of our budget, I think what might be helpful to this committee is the handout that I provided that has the OAH case history. And with that handout, you can see over the years where our cases are coming from and how OAH has evolved into what it is today. You can see that our caseload is down this last year. Our budget was built on the caseloads from 2010-2011, which were higher. We've seen a fairly significant reduction in our DUI cases, and that reduction occurred after the July 1, 2011 legislation on the right to refusal that was passed in 2011, where DUI licensee doesn't really have the right to refuse. If you do refuse, they will take your blood. And now that we have blood alcohol concentrations in almost every single, well, in all cases, our caseload has been reduced significantly as a result of that. In terms of our budget, I didn't ask for a supplemental budget other than to move some IT money from one series to another as requested by the IT folks. And I'm open for questions if any of you have any questions about what it is that we do or about our budget.
Senator Hastert, this is one of your areas of expertise. Do you have any questions?
Just a couple on how many, Mr. Chairman, thank you. The number of hearing officers remain the same over the years. Is there, what, can you give me a, give us an idea of what the backlog is like? You know, since you've, it sounds like you've undertaken considerably more as far as in under the transportation heading. So, you can give us a, kind of an idea of overall the hearing officers and kind of the backlog.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert. Actually, we don't have much of a backlog. I have a policy that no case remains on the docket for longer than 1 year. If it's a workers' compensation case or one of those all other category cases. And for a DUI case, 120 days is the maximum that I allow on the docket. By statute, we have 45 days to conduct a contested case hearing in a DUI case, and that's how we set them. A year ago, I was given an extra hearing examiner position, full-time position. I have filled that in anticipation of what was supposed to come to me through the Teacher Accountability Act, as well as additional boards were starting to use my agency, like the Board of Medicine. And the new caseload that has hit me are now multiple day hearings located around the state. And with the new hearing examiner, you know, I can say that I don't believe we have a backlog in cases on the docket. I did eliminate one contract hearing examiner position because I said that I would do that if I got a full-time hearing examiner position, and so I have done that. I was budgeted for that contract position, but I'm not filling it. And so that money will be returned. Whatever I don't spend is returned to the Department of Transportation and the Department of Employment. And so those monies will be refunded. So I think we're doing okay with our docket.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then since you're primarily you're doing workers' comp cases, I was just curious as to the number of, do you have any kind of idea or percentages that they that are found for the division or found for the individual?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, I do not keep win-loss statistics.
Anybody else?
I do.
Representative Nicholas, you do what?
I keep win-loss records.
I could say something, but I won't. Do you have a question in some of all that?
Deb, who was the part-time one that you let go? Just out of curiosity, because I don't know.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, Rick Lavery, he became a district court judge, and I had monies to fill his contract, and I did not fill the contract. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just before we cut them loose, there was I overheard there was a over-under on 7 minutes.
Oh.
Just wondering who was keeping track of that.
How did I do?
8 minutes.
8 minutes.
Wait a minute. I have some questions to ask.
I guess I didn't make it.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Harry, Water Development Commission.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I have with me Andrea Odell, who is the fiscal person for Water Development, and also have with me John Wade, who heads up the Planning Division, and Mike Hackett, who handles the Construction Division. We are headed to Senate Ag this afternoon, which is why Mike and John are with us today. I guess I would start with regards to our supplemental budget request, really two items. The first, very simple, moving $9,216 from Series 400 to Series 300 as requested by ETS, so a no net change there. The second item is, of course, the next requested grant appropriation for the Gillette Madison project in the amount of $30 million. This is in compliance with the schedule that was established in Enrolled Act, I believe 36 in 2011, which laid out a schedule of both loan and grant payments. For the 2013 session, it planned $30 million. In this 2014 session, $25,792,000. It also laid out payments or loan appropriations for both of those fiscal years, and those are no longer needed for the project because Gillette and Campbell County have passed their special purpose tax, which is providing the local share. So those two loan appropriations are not anticipated. So in terms of talking about the $30 million request, my request was for general fund dollars. That is the governor's recommendation as well. And also then spoke with Mr. Richards, and he had requested that we provide to you a cash flow, an anticipated cash flow schedule for the projects. And so that should be a document that is several pages but looks like this document here. Okay. Now, the way we built that cash flow schedule was starting in the first sheet, which is titled Gillette Madison Pipeline Project, Overall Project Budget and Estimated Bid Schedule. We looked at the anticipated target bid dates. We added about 60 days to the start of construction, and then we used a uniform cash flow drawdown through the duration of the project to build that cash flow schedule. So that's been provided. I would make the point to you that with regards to funding these multiple projects, and on that, items 1 through 25 represent, actually 1 through 24 represent planned bids or planned separate projects under this the Gillette Medicine project. Item 25 is an inflation factor that was put into the project budget. And so what you see, the shaded area in that first sheet, items 1 through 9 are contracts that have been let and are currently under contract. Items 10 through 24 are anticipated bids as the project moves forward. My point to you is that we provided the cash flow schedule, but in terms of how the City of Gillette will award contracts, they really need to have the full amount of money appropriated before they go to bid and let a contract. And if you think about it, you're not going to obligate yourself. And if you look at some of these contracts, they get to be quite large, upwards of $28 million for a separate contract. That money has to be in hand, i.e. through the appropriation process or a specific or special purpose tax, before they will award those contracts. So what I had done in terms of justifying the $30 million request was this particular document, which was provided to the governor's office way back in August-September timeframe, and we've since updated that a little bit. And so I'd like to, Kimmy, just walk you through.
Mr. Co-Chair, is that, I think it's the page before that in the handout.
It's entitled, okay. Wyoming Water Development Office Gillette Madison Pipeline Project Funding Summary. Yeah, okay.
Everybody, it's just the one before what Harry was just talking about. Turn right back one more page, Kurt. You got it. Everybody got it?
Okay.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start off with the note on the bottom, which is a summary of the funding for this project to date. And so you see this session year, session law, and date, the grant amount that was awarded in that particular session, and then any loan dollars that may have been appropriated as well. And then on the left-hand column, where those sources of money came from. So total to date, we've had $134,328,000 in appropriations.
$134 million.
Excuse me, $134,328,000 and some change. So going back up to then at the top of the page, you see that $134 million appropriation there. And then starting in, what we tried to provide to you then is the work currently under contract through fiscal year 12, $40,030,000. Planned contract awards in fiscal year 13, $93,730,000. And since the $30 million exception request that we have made will really then fund projects that will go to contract or bid in fiscal year 14, we show planned contract awards in fiscal year 14 at $17,470,000. So total planned contract awards through fiscal year 14 or this biennium, $151,230,000. The contingency item that I mentioned earlier, we have moved up into that because as those dollars are needed, we want to make that available. So total financial needs through fiscal year 14, $161,230,000. Again, then you see the dollars appropriated to date at $134 million. So the balance needed to take Gillette through this fiscal biennium, fiscal year 14, is $26,901,000. That matched up relatively closely to the planned $30 million appropriation in the 2011 Act, and so that was the basis for the request in our supplemental budget. Just continuing on into fiscal year 15, because that is the last year that we anticipate contract awards under this project, continuing on, $161 million through 14, planned awards through fiscal year 15, $56,370,000. You then get to the total project budget, $217,600,000. And so the purpose of that exercise was then to show if we go forward with the $30 million appropriation in this session, there will be a $14 million match from the City of Gillette, because the funding scenario is 67% grants from the state, 33% loans or local share, other dollars provided by the sponsor. And so $30 million and $14 million gives you the $179 million that would be available through 14 under that funding scenario, leaving the balance of the project at $38,495,000 and some change. If you look, then apply the 67% grant, 33% loan amount there, the 67% grant is $25,792,000, which is exactly the number that was planned in the 2011 schedule. So I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Harry, the expenditures planned for contract awards in fiscal year 14 is $17,470,000. Expect any of that work to be started before we meet next year?
Mr. Chairman, I will then go back to the second page in the cash, or the first page of the cash flow schedule, which is the schedule of all of those contracts. And so items 10 through 15 are contract awards in fiscal year 13. You see the planned bid dates at February 2013. Then we get into September. You see the planned awards on items 16 through 21 are September of 2013, which would be fiscal year 14. So those I would anticipate would start late in calendar year 2013. And again, the concept is if those dollars are not appropriated, then Gillette would not be able to proceed with contract awards.
Harry, I got a couple questions. On 1 through 9, you show what the estimated contract amount is. Has that all, that money's all been spent because most of it was 11 or 12 or a large portion of it. Where do you stand in what you estimated and what you spent? And if you don't have that, you could supply that to us. The other question, just for, you know, from what I do for a living, the two wells, you had $8.8 million. That just seems way, way on the high end. Is that what they actually came in at? 8.8 for two? And what's the depth? Aren't they like 3,500 foot depth for two Madison wells?
Mr. Chairman, I do, back to your first question, I don't have specific dollars in terms of actual contract amounts versus what the budgeted amount or targeted budget amount are, so we will provide that. With regards to those wells, they were bid. Those are the actual, well, the budget's going to be somewhere on the order of $9.5 million for completing two of those wells. They are about, Mike, about 3,000 feet deep, as I recall. About 3,000 feet deep, but we're talking about casing size on the order of 36 inch. So, and then and I'll give you the results on the first well that was drilled after the acidation process to enhance the flow out of there. It's a well that's producing about 1,400 gallons per minute sustained yield. So very good source of water, but these are expensive wells.
Did they use reverse circulation? Probably did, didn't they?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, well, if you could get that number to the committee as to where you are in terms of what you've let and where we are and what you expect, and then anything else, committee, on the Madison?
Mr. Chairman, just quickly, you know, so our state obligation is around $55 million, planned 30 this year and 25 the rest. I've heard some talk that maybe if we escalated that and funded the whole $55 million this session that we might see a cost savings, and I just want to maybe educate the committee whether that's hearsay or if that isn't fact.
Mr. Chairman, the concept would be to take a number of these contracts as now envisioned and combine them into one larger project, and you can expect some economy of scale in doing that. How much, I don't know that I would want to hazard a guess. The point I would make to you is when you look at, and this would really apply to the pipeline work, because those are contracts that lend themselves in terms of combining, but we have in terms of 10 through 15, you know, $9.5 million, $17 million, $28 million, and then there's a couple of smaller reaches or smaller projects. Those are really pretty large contracts as they are, and I don't know how much more economy of scale you might get.
Okay, so maybe, Mr. Co-Chair, ask that differently. If we appropriated all $55 million, I guess, would you even spend it, or would it just sit?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the city of Gillette is going to have somewhat of a struggle to spend that, accelerating that a year. And if you look at that, those dollars would start to flow towards really projects 22 through 24. One of those is drilling additional well, it's the well piping and, you know, transmission line there. So I struggle at this point with the consultant, with the Gillette staff that's involved in the project. I think they're going to struggle to try to accelerate the spending on the project.
Okay. Now, Ms. Co-Chair, one last question on that $10 million contingency inflation that you moved up into this fiscal year. How does that just is that like the entire project, two-thirds of that is our state money? Or I'm thinking about reversions, what's not going to be used out of that.
Mr. Chairman, that $10 million number would be funded 67% grant, okay. 33% local share.
And Mr. Chairman, maybe just probably be good to know how that fund is holding out over the next couple of years of the project as we move forward.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cook.
Senator Meyer?
And Mr. Chairman, my question was on that $10 million too. Harry, I wanted to make sure that all the local funds were spent first and the rest of the program, because we moved that $10 million up, the process wouldn't happen that we would have an overrun. We'd spend that, and at the end of the day, the sponsor would have some of the original match money not expended. And are there any clawback provisions to get that contingency back if there's if the last part of the project comes in under budget?
Mr. Chairman, if the bids were to come in high on some of these intervening projects and we were forced to use that $10 million, the way the program works is the contract's awarded, the contractor starts building the project, and then as they submit applications for payment to Gillette, which processes them and then sends them to us, our obligation is 67% of what they send to us. That's the grant portion. To the extent we're using loan dollars, then we would also reimburse the 33% loan share. So as we go forward, what I'm saying is we keep, regardless of whether we get into the contingency funds or whether it's just the basic project, we're only paying 67% of grant of actual costs. So it's not as if we're paying forward with those dollars at all. And so when we get to the end, whether we're looking at the project today, our obligation has been 67% of actual costs incurred, or whether we look at the end of the project in 3 years, it will still be 67% grant of actual costs incurred.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? On the money that's been spent on the Gillette Madison, I didn't find it in your 900 series. Have you submitted that?
Mr. Chairman, we have made that submittal to you.
I didn't find anything that said Gillette Madison. There's a lot of them, obviously, but I didn't find it. We don't need to have you look for it. If it's in there, show me where later, and then if it's not, please provide that.
Okay. Be happy to, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on Senator Perkins?
Thank you. Just a couple questions on that. What's been your experience so far with change orders once the initial bids on these contracts have been issued? Have you seen many change orders?
Eric?
Mr. Chairman, the one area where we've had a significant change order is in the drilling of the two wells. The contractor got started drilling the first well, actually had some issues with regards to losing part of his tool string downhole. He had to offset and redrill. In so doing, while he was not reimbursed for losing the tool string and such, the existing fracture that he was drilling through, and it was caving in and causing the issues, there was compensation through a change order for that. And I'll defer to Mike, that change order value was roughly $1 million on that contract. And the second, I guess, that well has now been completed. That's the 1,400 gallon per minute well. The second well, is the drilling has gone much better. And so we've not had near those types of issues. But there was a significant change order issued on the two-well contract.
Mr. Chairman, and just what was the rationale for why did the change order, because of that incident, what was the basis for reimbursing them for the million?
Mr. Chairman, the geologic conditions that were encountered in terms of losing circulation, voids that were encountered in terms of the subsurface conditions.
Okay. Had we made representations with respect to the conditions they would find as they went down, or?
Mr. Chairman, all we could show was the general geographic area that they would be drilled, the site that was chosen, and the issue of the balance we try to work is you would like to drill in fractured zones because that has the highest permeability, mm-hmm. allowing greater groundwater production. However, his attempts to drill where he was directed to drill, those geologic conditions were very severe, encountered voids, lost circulation, like I said, and was not able to ultimately recover in that particular hole and had to offset. But again, the losing of the tools, he took a pretty good hit on that as well. And so it was certainly negotiated. Those are always difficult scenarios, but I think ultimately it was a fair contract change order.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue. With respect to, I see that we've got our General Construction Administration and Management Controls. Who is that that's doing, who's overseeing that part of the?
Mr. Chairman, we have on that particular team, the City of Gillette is providing one full-time individual that's providing contract administration. His costs are being paid out of this project. We also have, of course, the consulting engineer who's providing contract administration assistance in that regards.
Have we as a part of that, have we had people look at this for value engineering or other things like that? And what I'm trying to get to is the reason I'm asking these questions, trying to cut to the chase, is simply I'm just looking for how confident you are that we've really gotten the value, that we're monitoring these things, and that we're getting the mm-hmm. value that we're paying for. That's really the basis of where I'm headed with this.
Mr. Chairman, have we done a value engineering?
Mr. Chairman, We've not done a true value engineering review of the project where you bring in another consultant to look at the contract designs. I will tell you that with regards to the design team that we have Morrison and Merrill Lee is working on the wells. We have an expert there. Oversight through Burns and Mack, who is the overall consulting engineer, but then the pipeline work tends to be pretty straightforward, but yeah. We have not undertaken a value engineering review.
Okay, and I really comes down to, I don't know that that's necessary, but I'm just how confident or what's your confidence level that this is being measured appropriately and we're getting the value? I mean, we're getting the bang for our buck that mm-hmm. that we should be as we do this project.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. My thoughts are we are getting the value out of this project, and two reasons. One, the consultant that we hired is of a national reputation. They've done a lot of work, not only in this state but across the country. But then the individual that Gillette has retained to do their contract administration actually has a fair amount of experience in the Sheridan regional water system before he moved to Gillette. So familiar with big pipeline efforts and a very solid engineer. So I think between those two entities, I'm confident that we're getting a good product.
And finally, Mr. Chairman, and you're satisfied that there's enough independence with those with those kind of supervising engineers and the contractors that we don't have any issues there?
Mr. Chairman, answer is yes, and the reason I feel that way is the individual we have on my staff that's assigned to this project also has a fair amount of experience, and I've actually heard from the sponsor felt that maybe he was too tough on the sponsor
okay.
in terms of negotiating change orders and such. So I have a lot of confidence in
okay.
the team
Thank
that we've got deployed.
Well, back on that change order, maybe you've changed your contracts, but the contracts I've had with you, if you encountered lost circulation and stuff, it's been on the contractor. So I'm curious as to why this is different.
Mr. Chairman, Because I am new, what I would like to do is provide more detailed explanation of all that was negotiated and the claim that was received by the contractor so we can be very specific.
Yeah, and please, we don't need to have spent a lot of time on that unless the committee's interested in that. I sure would be, and why we change, if the wording's different in the contract, why we would change it for this one particular one where, you know, most of the wells, why the Water Development Commission drills, you know, you bid it, and you have, it's on the contractor, that's why your prices are high, that's why the bids go mm-hmm. higher, but it's on them ultimately. Mm-hmm. So this is unusual that you would award that kind of a change order for that amount. So, yeah, please just send that to me and we can talk about it. Any other questions? Senator Perkins?
Sure. Just follow up, because I guess going back to the change order, I mean, that was the big one. What's probably the next size of the change order? Or if we, from there, do we drop down to they're just not very many and they're just minor?
Mr. Chairman, beyond that one, the change orders have been minor, but my suggestion is why don't we provide a listing of those change orders in the contract? So, again, I don't have that information with me today. Be happy to provide that.
Okay, anything else, members of the committee? I just see where our water development account 3 is about 125 million. Is that where we are on that one, Harry?
Mr. Chairman, yes, very close to that.
And you have your two projects moving forward. Is there any, are you seeing anything different going on out there in the type of projects you're seeing and hearing from the constituency of our state relative to where the needs are? Anything, any surprises to you out there? Is it kind of business as usual?
Mr. Chairman, the one observation I would make is we are moving two reservoir projects forward, one into the design and permitting phase. That's the West Fork project, and then a very small reservoir in the Star Valley called the Cottonwood Lake Enlargement. That one we're moving to design and construction. Interestingly, we have received protests on both of those projects. So as we move into reservoir projects where we're getting close to actually getting something built, we are getting some protests on those.
Sue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What direction are those protests coming from? What's the nature of the protests?
Mr. Chairman, on the West Fork project, we have a water rate appropriation upstream, and it, at least initially, when the appropriator became aware of the project, what they said was, we have been diverting water in a free river condition, and what that means is, he has a water right that allows a certain appropriation when administration is in place, but in a free river condition, no administration, they're allowed to divert more than their lawful appropriation as long as they're beneficially using that, and he has historically done that for a number of years. The concern there is by placing a junior water right downstream, i.e. the reservoir, that he may be subject to calls. The other protest for the Cottonwood Lake enlargement involved some folks that felt that, and that particular project, we're looking at impounding a depth of water of 7 feet for irrigation use. And so as that irrigation water is drawn out at the end of the summer, then you will start to see an exposed shoreline. And those individuals objected to that. They wanted a natural setting for that particular facility.
Okay, the only other thing I had, on the... In the irrigation districts, you know, one of the, I think, the best ways we spend our money is to repair and maintain those districts and the loss of water, and especially with the drought last summer. Are you still seeing irrigation districts come forward requesting these kind of funds for repair and maintenance? That's still a big-ticket item, and do you have the proper funds to, I mean, what's your backlog on that? That, to me, is a really good way to spend our water development money.
Mr. Chairman, I think we have 6 or 7 irrigation districts that are moving forward with, this would be in the construction bill, rehab projects within their district. I strongly feel that they are very good projects. Those come out of Water Development Account 2. And that particular account, I'm concerned about the level of funding there. with the current slate of projects that are recommended, that account will be left with about $2.9 million at the end of this biennium, which is getting pretty skinny.
Well, and of course, you're subject to the price of the commodities because you're funded by the severance tax, so your revenues are down. What percent are they down?
Well, Mr. Chairman, actually, because of the fact that our revenue stream is capped, we actually are seeing that the full amount of the revenue stream flowing in there. So
it hasn't dropped down to the cap side.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Pat.
Okay. If you want to introduce any folks, or if you're a one-man show, go ahead and get going. You know the drill pretty much. Take us through your budget.
Thank you, Representative Harshman, Mr. Chairman, and Chairman Bebout. I'm Pat Terrell, State Engineer, here to discuss the budget for the agency, and I would like to introduce couple of people. The person to my right is new Deputy State Engineer Greg Lanning. Greg comes to us from Pocatello most recently, where he was Director of Public Works, but he is a Wyoming man, so we welcome him back. Also behind me is Mr. Steve Winders, our Fiscal Officer, and Steve can wave, I guess. So there are three of us here today to help you go through our supplemental items. And Mr. Chairman, I guess the how we go through that is up to you, whether you'd like us to just go through the budget book or go through just the items. We're happy to do either.
Let's look at the cuts and then go by page, please.
All right, Mr. Chairman. You should have they are listed in the budget book, but you should also have a document that looks like this, and they are line itemed on page 3.
Time out. Everybody got it?
Got it. So that's 177.
Yep. Everybody got it?
Hang on. Let me make sure we're talking from the same thing. I was going to talk from this. Page 3. All right.
Okay, I think we're set. Go ahead.
Okay. The total number that we were seeking to remove is listed at the bottom. It's approximately $1.1 million to get to the budget cut that we were asked to reach to for the current fiscal year. Those numbers come as from the top moving down, a removal of $20,000 from our in-state travel budget in the administration division. That division, by the way, is where my position, the deputy, HR, fiscal, et cetera, are located. Moving again, we have another reduction in travel costs for out-of-state travel within that same division. And then some $5,000 in supplies. And the fourth item to follow and the last item under the administration division is $55,578 as a reduction in USGS co-op studies in our stream gauge network agreement with the USGS. That last number reflects the fact of one gauge being discontinued and two other gauges that we hopefully are going to be able to fund through another funding stream that is coming back in the Colorado River Basin. So those are the four areas where we reduced funding in the administration division. And I can maybe stop there if there are questions or just keep going.
We'll keep going.
In our groundwater division, we had received some money in the past to get some professional boots on the ground to monitor water use under the Niobrara oil play. That amount will be reduced by some $85,000. We also will be reducing or actually eliminating our USGS groundwater data network agreement by $65,000 and change. And let me explain that data network agreement does not mean that there's any loss of any groundwater data. These were data that we collect and we can post. We keep the data, so it's not going anywhere, but we did have an agreement that spanned some period of time with the USGS to actually review that data, give it the Good Housekeeping seal of approval, and publish it as USGS data. We will no longer be doing that. We'll be serving that out of our shop. So the data isn't going anywhere, but how it's published will change. That's the end of the reductions in our groundwater division. In our surface water division, there is a...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Terrell, looking back at that reduction in the Niobrara oil play related funding, I was just wondering, is that just a reflection of you done kind of the work you needed to do with regards to that and the demands decreasing, or is it a change in how you're approaching it? What does that change in funding reflect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, it's a little bit of both, but I would say that it's largely due to a reduction in exploration in this county right now. The Niobrara play was largely a piece of work that we needed to do in this county because of the existence of the Laramie County Control Area and the fact that a lot of water was being produced through temporary water use agreements that we really just had to follow, some of which even went out of state. It's the subject of another bill I'm working on. But we are still continuing to track water use here to the lesser extent that it's occurring, as well as up in the Niobrara County, Converse County, the Parkman Sussex play. That's a little easier for us to manage because you don't have a control area involved up there, and we simply issue either temporary use agreements or short-term permits for wells up there to provide the drilling water. All right. Absent more questions, we'll just keep going. We, in our surface water division, we had a position eliminated, position number 12. It was one that we hadn't had filled, and we are eliminating that, as well as approximately $20,000 in professional fees. We had carried a small budget of professional fees in that surface water division. I think it was to some extent left over from dollars we had maybe 5 or 7 or 8 years ago from inspecting coal bed reservoirs. Now, some of that is still going on, but we're not using it, the professional fees, in that fashion anymore. So some of those dollars are being turned back. We've also used those professional fees over time, and it's not a big budget, but occasionally for in-stream flow studies when we need a contractor to do those. We now move to the Board of Control division, which is our single largest division. It's where all of our field personnel, field efforts, and the adjudication efforts of some staff in Cheyenne are included. There's a reduction of about $7,740, or of $7,740, for professional fees for the Bighorn settlement. That is a piece of work that is winding down. We had professional fees there for consultants, et cetera, and even we have still some remaining budget in there for public notices, et cetera, as that adjudication winds to hopefully a close. We would be eliminating position 125, which is a field position in Water Division 1, for a savings of $111,448. In Division 2, that superintendent requested the elimination of about $6,400 in supply funding. Now, that's the third item under Board of Control. The fourth item is changing the nature of a position in Casper from a full-time to a nine-month seasonal position and saving the money there. That's about $41,000.
The next item is the savings in MVMS that we would achieve by turning in position 125. We also then don't need a vehicle for that position. As I go through these, I'll just let me explain sort of why you see some different numbers in different divisions. We actually went to our superintendents, or I did, and I said, you tell me where you think the reductions are best survivable in your division. And so that's why you'll see some different numbers between Division 2 and Division 4. Those are superintendent recommendations. We reviewed them and then moved them forward. So the next item that you see, the $75,000 reduction, is moving five seasonal positions where their months of work have been reduced either, I think, from 9 to 6 or... 9 months a year to 6. What that does is, even though they're seasonal and they work mainly the irrigation season, they also work outside of that season to get gauges up and running, to close them down at the end of the season, and to work their records. We have a $100,000 reduction in stream gauge supplies. That's our next item, which is about 75% of that particular budget. The next item under professional fees for Board of Control is we have a software package in that division that is the same package that the USGS runs. We are maintaining and running about 250 different sites around the state, sites that we've been funded to automate through the legislative process over the past 4 to 6 years, maybe even longer in the Bear River drainage. And those locations and do need the occasional battery, solar, sensor replacement, tubing, data collection platforms, etc. So we do need to keep a budget for repairs and maintenance. And to give you an idea why those are needed, obviously vandalism, and if you remember the Fontenelle fire from last summer, we lost a gauge in Division 4 because it just burned to the ground. So that will need to be replaced.
Mr. Chairman? Just following up on that, if I understood what you said, so what is it? You've been expanding and installing additional stream gauges, and right now what your plan is that you'll maintain the ones you have, but you're not going to expand your network. That's where the savings comes from?
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Bebout, Senator Perkins, the capital cost for the construction of those gauges, of course, is done.
Yeah.
We're not putting any more in, but we did estimate what we thought we would need to keep as a budget for parts on the shelf or parts that may need to be ordered, and we're simply going to cut that budget. And it still leaves us with about $25,000 there, and we'll have some other money under another item I'm about to get to. We're not going to be horribly flush. If we have equipment issues, and we do have a lot of damage, whether it's hail or fire or vandalism, you may have to be back here talking about that, but we're trying to get to the point where we're essentially running skinny.
Mr. Chairman, and so yeah, and that's our job to make sure you're not horribly flush. But anyway, so if I understood, the cutting you're having is that you're not going to build any additional sites already built. You're going to simply maintain the ones you've had, and you think you've got a bare bones budget for maintenance. That's what you've told us today.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I think that's right. We basically went to the field and said how much, we don't know how many fires we'll have or anything else, or floods. Right. We lose them to floods, too. But basically we'll use what we have, and if it isn't enough or if it's too much, there'll be movement. If it's too little, then I suppose we'll be down at a location for a while until we can get it repaired. Okay, Mr. Chairman, under professional fees, the next $119,000, we had some money that was given to us when we got the what we call the Aquarius software, which again is the software that the USGS runs that we actually download work records on, and it's the one that at right now I think the public can actually get into our website and see a few sites around the state. We're working all the time to get more of them loaded up. That software has some maintenance to go with it. We've been to some extent a test bed for the Aquarius company, in that they've really enhanced their software to make us work because we have so many sites. And so whatever, the support for that software, which is very valuable to us, is included in that, as well as some additional repair funding. So between operation, maintenance, and repairs, we will be left with somewhere over $100,000 for the biennium with these cuts. We now move on to our IT division, or what's called IT maintenance and support. It's actually our support services division, and these are dollars that come to us for our e-permit system and its ongoing maintenance for, and this is our custom permitting software package that was built following visits to the legislature starting in about 04. It's a not a canned system, it's a custom permitting, water rights permitting system and water rights database that we are now running. And when you, we built somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think we spent between $3 and $4 million on that system. And it is fairly intricate, and we have a need to make sure the equipment that is included with that has maintenance agreements, that the software with it have maintenance agreements, that the software with it are always the current version, and that expenditure is in this budget. This is what, after our IT consolidation, we gave positions over to ETS, and having talked with the CIO and going through the whole process, we were allowed to maintain just a very core staff to run this system because of its special nature within the agency and not really being standard software at all. Some of the hardware that we have, for example, that we maintain include large bed scanners for big maps. We have equipment that actually takes microfilm and converts it to scanned images. So there are cameras involved in that. We have a lot of ArcGIS type software that we run to map water rights. And the maintenance for all that is included in these budgets. As I move now to the Interstate Streams Division, we will be reducing professional services by $135,000 there. We had maintained and do maintain professional services dollars in that division to pay various things that we owe to out-of-state or regional or things like the Upper Colorado River Commission, Western States Water Council, Yellowstone River Commission, etc., among other things. We had some 900 series dollars in that division to do our Colorado River consumptive use program, which we came to and got funded about 5 years ago or 6 years ago when the Colorado River was so dry and has been a very valuable program. But we're going to reduce those continuing funds by about $135,000. Under supplies, we actually have some supplies for the North Platte. We have some North Platte appropriations, and we'll be reducing the $18,000 in supplies and about $5,000 in professional fees under those two budgets. And that gets us, Mr. Chairman, to a total of about $1.1 million. I can tell you that our philosophy in going into these was to spread them out and equally affect, I guess you could say, every division within the agency. Cut where it hurt the least and try and get to where we could meet the dollars. Now, one last thing is on the right-hand side, you'll see that I have ranked them, those that are most painful and those that are least painful, if that's of any value to the committee.
I have a question on the North Platte. You know, I think we started out, you had to have a staff of 10 or 12 when the litigation was going on and the settlement was being reached, and I think you're down to six now. I guess my question is what type of people are they, and is it, how long are we going to have to do this? I mean, I know we have to monitor, I know we got to protect our rights and all that, but is this something we can kind of be backing out of here shortly, or is it something, this the number of people and cost? I think it's costing us well over $1 million a biennium. Do you see any way to reduce that here coming up soon?
Mr. Chairman, I do not. I don't. There's no end date in the decree or the stipulation as to when we stop monitoring under the decree, the modified decree. We have been reduced through not really attrition, but when we had hiring restrictions back in 08 and 09, we had a position or two open that we were not allowed to fill, one of which was our daily accounting position in Torrington. That one is the person in that position at that time is now the superintendent of that division. So what we had to do simply was absorb that work into his role at that time as assistant superintendent, and we've never been able to fill that position. I think we're down to about 7 total out of the 10 that were originally appropriated under North Platte funds. We're at about the same number of people total now in Division One. And we're a few more than we were back, say, in 1999, but not demonstrably more. Well, I think one or two of those positions actually were in Cheyenne, my North Platte coordinator and one clerical position.
And those people are monitoring and analyzing. There's nobody in their litigation, any of those kind of support people, right? It's just monitoring and taking care of the gauges and seeing what's going on with the Platte and the system and based on the decree, right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And okay. And I did not answer your previous question very well. We monitor intentionally irrigated acres every summer, so we have people on the ground physically looking at acres. It would be nice if at some point we could do that through satellite imagery, for example, but, well, we're not quite there yet.
Okay.
But, yes, they're doing that. They're doing the daily accounting. They're doing – and that staff has absorbed the Platte River Recovery Program. So we're also complying with that program with no additional staff.
Senator Dockstetter.
Chairman, just quick clarification on your pain level chart. 1 is the worst or 3?
Oh. 1 is minimal impact to us. So those that with a 1 on them are we felt at the time that we penciled those numbers in that if they had to get cut, we can live best with those. 3s are more difficult for us.
Yeah, and when we look at your reductions, I think most of them could be biennialized, which is good for you. And, you know, and what's coming up, of course, are the 8%.
Yes.
So we're looking at in 15, 16. I'm sure you're very aware of that, and it's a real deal.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to have to take a hard look at that. Any other questions for our state engineer? Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. Protect our Wyoming water like you do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's pretty precious. Okay. Welcome back to Wyoming. Yeah, that's good. Board of Equalization. Steve. Remember Charlie's deal.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bebout and Chairman Harshman. I'm Steve Olmsted with the State Board of Equalization, and to my right is the Vice Chairman Tom Glaus, and behind me is Jana Fitzgerald, our budget analyst for the office. And we've presented to you our budget book and also a printout of sort of an analysis of our reduction, which is a separate form, the colored form. Our budget reduction, looking at page 3 of our budget book, essentially what we did was we had a position vacated in June of this year, which was still part of the previous biennium budget, but we did not fill that. That was the executive secretary's position. And when we first started doing the 8% budget reductions, we got to a point where we could get the 8%, but we could not sustain it for the next biennium. So going back and looking carefully at our budget, it appeared that what we could do was not fill the executive secretary's position as such, but what we ended up doing was eliminating the office support position and filling the executive secretary position. These are working titles at the reduced salary or the market salary. The previous executive secretary was paid at above salary position, and so filling it at market, we're able to get to the amount of dollars that we needed for the 8% reduction. We needed $70,606. We were able to get that with the position being vacated and being filled at market value with reduced benefits as well. That is sustainable for the remainder of this biennium and going into the next budget series. That means that we're going from a seven-person agency to a six-person agency. With there are some other minor reductions that really came out of the IT budget, but overall, what we're looked at was getting the $70,606. That allowed a remainder in the overall budget for us of $39,704, and that has been moved into the 900 series for the purposes of filling out a contract position during those periods of time when we are over understaffed or we've got issues where we need to have the office staff filled in. And during this past year, during those summer months, we tried to see if we could sustain that without filling the position for those months, and it was marginal, and we were able to do it, and I think successfully because we had a summer intern who was able to pick up certain chores and activities when the rest of us were tied up in the actual abstract review and unable to be at our offices. That, in a nutshell, is where we've been able to make the cuts.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? I don't have on my list who's responsible for this in the House. Representative Burkhart, and in the Senate, it's probably you, Senator Perkins, since you're on Revenue Committee, but I'm not sure. I don't have that list. Anyway, Representative Burkhart, you got any questions? Senator Dockstader, oh. Well, I guess we have no questions. I have one.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Don, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, on this one, I think two issues need to at least be identified, and I'm looking on page 13 and 14 of their budget request. First of all, as the witness indicated, he's eliminating one position. That was not ever shown in the charts, so I would indicate that in column 5 at the bottom and column 6 at the bottom, FTE be reduced by 1. Secondly, the governor's recommendation suggests that he intends to move the savings realized from this transfer to the 900 series. He has not done that in the table on page. On page 14, you can see he's left $5,354. So that leaves us uncertain as to where those funds should be deposited.
You tracking on that?
I am.
Okay.
And it was unclear to me what the governor had in mind, but my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jana, I thought that was looking at money that we still had in our IT budget that was being moved out. So,
Brett.
Time. I think I have the cursed microphone here. Maybe that's better. No? Mr. Chairman, the additional $5,354 reduction in general fund reflects the additional reduction in general fund, I believe, reflects an additional reduction taken in column 6 as a result of this change in reduction plan, and it's associated with the elimination of position 14 as recommended at the top of page 12. It's a little hard to see some of this because the $39,704, as was referred to by the agency, is excess funding associated with position number 5, which I believe they filled at a lower wage. than what it was previously filled at.
Don, would you agree?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't agree or disagree. We're fine either way. We just don't know where to put the money.
Brett?
Mr. Chairman, we can certainly work through the details with your staff on this and make sure we're square on it.
Okay. The question I had is, you've got 37 pending cases by category, and, of course, you just drew through January 1 of 2013. Is that a typical load that you would have? Is that high, low? Just curious as to how much work you're doing over there.
Well, that, Mr. Chairman, be about fluctuates from year to year, and actually the 37, if we went back and looked, some of those cases have been dismissed and we've added new cases. But typically at the end of the year, it tends to be the lower part, and when we get to about June, we're at the high point of the year. So,
and are the mineral audits still taking the lion's share of your time because of the complexity of them?
Actually, no. We've got some sales and use taxes and state assessed cases that seem to be taking a considerable amount of our time.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you.
I show Department of Family Services. And that's the last one. You want to fix this being ahead of schedule? DFS. Steve, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that better? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're on.
Thank you. Committee, I'd like to start by introducing myself, Steve Corsi with the Department of Family Services. I'm the director, and the colleague to my left is Paul Yaksik, our chief financial officer, the brains behind the operation. Before we get into the budget numbers, I'd like to take you through a few highlights that we have in the department since our last meeting with Joint Appropriations Committee. The first one is that about April 1st, last spring, we consolidated our Juvenile Services and Protective Services divisions. This set up the potential for us to develop and implement a crossover youth practice model, which is recognized as a best practice nationally in assisting the populations in juvenile and protective services. The second highlight is that we have been focused on customer service. Late spring and early summer in 2012, we trained 100% of our staff face-to-face in collaboration with our community college system across the state in customer service, and we continue to focus on those efforts. The third point is that we restructured our economic assistance division to improve accountability and responsiveness to Wyoming constituents. We also undertook an effort this past year to analyze and establish caseload standards, which had not been done in the department before, in the areas of protective services and juvenile services, which, as I mentioned, has now been combined and is called the Social Services Division, and also within the Economic Assistance Division. This establishing caseload standards allows us to use our workforce in a more flexible way. For example, By implementing caseload standards, we were able to identify some areas in the state where our caseloads were too high. We were able to identify other areas in the state where our caseloads were too low. Where our caseloads were too low, when we ended up with a vacancy in those areas, we never used an occupied position, but when we had a vacancy in those areas, then we would move that position to a place where the caseloads were too high, and thus equalizing the caseloads. Our fifth highlight, and we have nine, but our fifth highlight is that we have had a number of successful criminal prosecutions this year for public assistance fraud, four successful to be exact, and seven, currently in process. Point number six is our Child Support Enforcement Division, which is near and dear to many hearts. We are currently in the third position nationally. That's across 50 states and three territories. We were in the number one position. We got bumped to number three, and we're aggressively pursuing getting back in number one, and I'm convinced that we're going to do that again. I would also like to introduce the committee to a gentleman behind me, Dr. Marty Nelson, if he'll stand for just a moment. This is Dr. Marty Nelson. Has a doctorate in clinical psychology, and we've brought him into the department as our clinical administrator. Thank you, Marty. We did this for a number of reasons. One is that in conversation throughout the department, we weren't completely sure that kids, youth, and children's needs were being met across the state of Wyoming. We purchased a lot of services. Much of that was based on the honor system, and we weren't sure that we were getting necessarily what we were purchasing. We also weren't sure that we were getting the quality of care that we wanted to be getting for our youth and families, and also the levels of care or the comprehensiveness that we were after. Additionally, Dr. Nelson will be providing training and consultation for our caseworkers throughout the state. And as most of you know, we have 28 field offices across the state, currently about 733 employees, I believe. 300 or so of those are in this social services division, and so that'll be a big job for Dr. Nelson. The last two points, one is that the governor, when I started March 6th of 2011, the governor had all of the directors sign a commitment letter with a number of things outlined. One of those things was to streamline policy, rule, and statute to make state government more user-friendly for Wyoming citizens. And I'm pleased to report to you that within the last couple of hours, we were in a House Judiciary Committee where the Chairman Gingrey brought House Bill 119, which was a cleanup bill helping us to clean up all the statute. We've also reduced significantly our policy and continue with those efforts as well as with the rules. And then our last highlight point is that you're going to note that through our presentation that we're proposing elimination of 22 positions. As a result of that elimination, we are cross-training all staff in our early childhood division as well as all staff in our social services division to ensure that we have critical backup in place for all positions, not just the ones that we are eliminating, but all positions throughout the department. There are too many places in state government where one person does a job, and if they're on vacation, that job ceases to exist. So if the committee would move to page number 9 with us, we'll begin walking through the numbers. On page number 9, I would highlight in the far right column, the governor's recommendation. I would just like to highlight the total reduction that we're proposing of $6,193,812. That represents a 7% reduction for fiscal year 2014. And it's important to me to note, and I hope to you as well, that that does not account for the 3.7% reduction that we made in 2013, the first year of the biennium. That's on top of that 3.7%.
And while you're talking about that, when we had the across-the-board cuts of 10% in a couple of years before that, how many of those were put back into your budget? Is that 3.7? Did the 10% go out, come back in, and then 3.7% more? How does that all track?
Mr. Chairman, As I wasn't here, I think I'd like to defer to our CFO on that.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, the funds did not come back. Funds came out of low-income energy assistance and some of our child care subsidies, and that was done in the last part of the biennium on Governor Freudenthal's last actions, and the money stayed out.
So then that 10% stayed out, then you have an additional 3.7%, and now you're doing an additional 7.8%. Am I tracking correctly?
Mr. Chairman, you are indeed.
So if you could do a one-pager that shows just the total amount, the 10%, how that tracked, and it didn't come back in the standard budget or any supplemental request, another 3.7 where you are today, that would, just so we can track that. Okay, please continue.
Mr. Chairman, would you like us to send that to you to distribute to the committee? Or
I think the committee would be interested in seeing that, to all of us. Well, yeah, when I ask for me, I mean us.
Yes, sir. We're happy to do that.
Thank you. And if there's any court, and you talked about the reduction in personnel, I don't want to take a lot of time for a big report. It should be pretty easy to pull out. I just want the specifics so we can see what you've done. Thanks.
Yes, sir. If the committee would move to page number 13. This is our protective services unit, unit 5902. And on page 13, you'll see the position reductions that we've proposed in this unit. There is one of those positions in bold, and the governor has asked us all throughout state government to make our reductions in a surgical fashion. And when we presented these to him, he suggested that we retain one. We've done that at his suggestion in order to have that surgical focus. In this unit, then, as opposed to 11 reductions, there will be 10. It is important to note that from the time I arrived, we have heard internal and external to the department that the department was top-heavy. We started our reductions in the state office, and of the 22 reductions that we are proposing in collaboration with the governor, 9 of those, or 41%, are out of the state office. And that was an effort on our part to impact the field as little as possible.
What's the significance of position 1162 that he wanted to keep it?
Do you know that position? Is that a benefit
special? An AMN assistant.
We cut a lot. Mr. Chairman, our CFO has indicated that that is an admin assistant and that he was concerned that we had cut too much support.
And 314, what is that?
314. Oh, this is a deputy director of the department. I eliminated the deputy director position, honestly, Mr. Chairman, I believe that the department runs better as a result of not having an additional layer of management between the director and the division administrators.
Interesting.
I'm
hearing that from a lot of might be working someplace else.
Mr. Chairman, I better be careful. I'm speaking for my department alone.
Please continue.
Thank you, sir. I would like to point out, and I'll just do this one time and then move along, that at the bottom of the general fund column number 3, you can see the total amount of monetary reduction in general fund for this unit. I won't point out the totals in the subsequent units, but in this unit, it's $1,160,649. Moving on to the next page, page 14. I want to take just a moment to talk about this page. This page addresses the start of the Enterprise Technology Services consolidation and transfers for our department. My understanding is that the ETS transfers have been discussed by other directors and departments as well as the LSO with this committee, and so as we move through our pages, we don't plan to address this after this page other than to say that the governor recommends this and we concur. We've been on board with the ETS consolidation all right from the start, and in fact, we're recently told that we were the first department to make full IT transfers. We transferred 24 positions to ETS for this committee's knowledge. We continue to work with ETS to ensure a mutually successful transition. We have meetings with them regularly, and I'm pleased to report that that's going well.
Any questions on the ETS? I think that's fine. You don't have to cover it again. We're good with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the committee would move to page 16, there are two items on this page that I'd like to point out, two reductions in column number 3. The first reduction toward the top of the page you'll note is $102,149. We in state government are taking 8% reductions. We've been talking with the Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes about sharing somewhat in those reductions. We held off on that this year, even though we reduced within the department, to give them time to plan and work those reductions into their budget. And while we're taking 8%, we're proposing here a 7% reduction to them, and we've already let them know that. The next one down is $168,600.
Is that in their TANF program?
No, sir. This is in social services.
Social service. Okay.
Yes, sir. The next reduction down is $168,642. As part of that ETS consolidation, we had a number of contractors, IT contractors in our department, who were highly paid. And we were able to eliminate a contract here, and then you'll see a couple of additional as we move through our presentation. But this is an IT contractor. Moving to page 18, Unit 5904, our Juvenile Justice Unit. You can see that we're making three position reductions in this unit, and two of those are high-level state positions. Moving to page 21, in column 3, you'll see the reduction of $2.595 million. The governor also, if you move over to column 6, the governor also recommended an $850,000 reduction. And so it's important to add those two together to get the total of the reduction, which is $3,445,768. And that reduction is 1, 2, 3, 4 different things. One of those is one-time funding for Youth Challenge through the Wyoming Military Department. We assisted them last year with $250,000 to help get them through. The second thing was to the elimination of a pilot program project for about $200,000. And without going into the details of that, it served a small select group of people out of one county. We were able to, by eliminating that $200,000, stopping the contract, we were actually able to expand that to even more citizens. It's a little bit of a long story, but happy to discuss that if anybody would like at some point. This also represents, I think it was about $1.4 million, Paul, in detention subsidy elimination. Those subsidies were paid to Natrona and Laramie counties. As bridge funding while they were standing up their juvenile detention centers. Those are now stood up, and we've moved them on to a daily rate as opposed to a monthly subsidy. And then the last part of that reduction is a 3% reduction in court-ordered placement costs that we believe that we can make over the next year or a little more through efficiencies within the department. Moving on to page 23, this is our boys' school, Unit 5905, and we have one position proposed to be reduced in this unit. Moving to page 27, this is our girls' school in Sheridan, Unit 5906. We're proposing reductions of two positions. One is an administrative assistant, and the other is a therapist. You'll note that the therapist is about $170,000 biennially. Currently, the girls' school in Sheridan contracts with Northern Wyoming Mental Health to provide the clinical services, and we were able to eliminate this position because those needs are being met through an outside contract.
Mr. Co-Chair, what's the population at the girls' school now? I know we built a new dorm up there a few years ago, and I'd heard it was full. Then I heard it was empty, and I've heard all kinds of stuff. So maybe update the committee on that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, if I can back up just a little bit. You asked about the girls' school,
yeah.
But I'll give you the census on both institutions.
Okay.
At the boys' school in Worland, as of yesterday afternoon, we had 79 students. And in the girls' school, I believe it's 35 students as of yesterday. We've identified that placements are declining. There is a little bit of a cyclical nature to placements, however. But we have started the conversation that if placements continue to decline, that we need to take a look at doing business a little bit differently. And for those members of this committee who were here last year, you'll remember that we've started that conversation with the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Co-Chairman, did I answer your question?
Yeah, I just, you know, you obviously when you have that many more employees and how many employees then at the girls' school? Is it 83 there or 80?
Mr. Co-Chairman, speaking off the top of my head, actually, let me look. That'll be right in our...
Is that on page 30? Just so I'm looking at the right. 80 employees and 35 customers.
Yes, sir. 79 full-time employees and one part-time.
Yeah. Okay.
It is important to remember with both institutions that they are 24-hour facilities.
Sure.
Nonetheless, we are aware that with declining population, at least at the girls' school, that we're going to have some hard decisions to make. Mr. Chairman, is it okay if our CFO makes a comment?
Mr. Co-Chair, we remodeled the institution and we stopped one dorm, and we eliminated one dorm when we saw the decreasing. So just to let you know that's like a $4 million project that we did not complete.
Refreshing my memory.
Please continue.
Thank you. If we can move to page 31, this is Unit 5909, our Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Unit. And our proposal is to reduce one position, a caseworker, in this unit. I would also point out that this is the last unit in our social services appropriation, and will now be moving into our economic assistance appropriation. If you'll turn with me to page...
Before you get to there, Steve,
yes, sir.
How are you doing on turnover? And I can remember in the past it was an issue with this part of the Family Services Department. Is your turnover over manageable? Are you seeing a lot of it? Are you able to get good employees and keep them?
It, Mr. Chairman, is the question turnover in a specific unit or the department-wide?
With the social workers primarily.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the exact numbers on turnover. We can certainly get that information fairly quickly. I don't know the exact numbers right now. I do know that we had a little more turnover in 2011, that we were running fairly low turnover, and I believe with the change in the administration, maybe jobs coming open, better economy, I'm not sure what all the factors were, but we had a little increase in turnover. Last I knew, it was slightly above 12%, which to me is a little bit problematic, but I've also heard of other places where turnover has run near 20%. So I think we're in pretty good shape with turnover.
And that's a tough position to fill. And you know, from what I can recall, 12% or at least 8 to 12 is pretty manageable. So if you're in that range, it's something you can deal with. Okay, thank you. Please.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, that 12% was not in our social services division. I don't believe it was even that high in our social services division. I believe it was under 10%. That was in our economic assistance division, which unfortunately tends to be our lower paid positions.
Okay. Senator Perkins? Okay, keep going.
Senator,
no, he'll wait. Just keep going.
We're about to leave that appropriation.
Turn your mic on, please.
Follows up on the chairman's question. Steve, my recollection is that when you go out and you look at your field service folks, that you have a substantial number that are over 50, and so you've got this, seems like you've got this kind of bulge that's come through as you go to, as we get near to retirement. And so, anyway, I don't know if you guys have
talked about that, but ultimately that's going to be a I foresee that to be a potential problem for you guys to manage when as it starts to occur and people start to take their retirement.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I agree with you. We have a number of issues in our workforce. One of those is the age of many of our workforce. We are trying to look at that within the department. Obviously, we have to be sensitive to hiring regulations and personnel rules and those types of things. But we do have a significant number that are going to be retiring in the not-too-distant future. Yes, sir. We are having those conversations, for what it's worth. Page 36 moves us into our economic assistance appropriation, and this is our welfare reform unit, unit number 6015, and you'll notice that we had four positions proposed. The governor asked us to hold two of those back, and in hindsight, I'm glad he did. One of those positions we're using for training for economic assistance. It's a need that we identified across the state. Another one we're using for administrative support for our early childhood division, primarily for three purposes, and I think Senator Perkins would be, I hope, pleased with this. One is to establish a hotline that person will man for some ongoing issues that we're, I think, close to ironing out, but we're not quite there yet. Another is to enhance customer service, and then the third is to assist in troubleshooting problems quickly for our constituency as well as our providers. Moving on to page...
Hold on a second.
Yes, sir.
Senator Meyer.
Over on federal funds on page 35, trying to do the math there, we started out with $76,656,000. You proposed a reduction. The governor said, no, we're going to give you $1.6 million. But so I'm thinking that you add the $76,656,000 to the $1.6 million, and that should be the number in the right, and it should be about $78 million, but it's $75 million. So am I doing the math right there?
Federal funds. Mr. Chairman, I could be wrong here. I'm gonna take a shot at this. If we start with the 76 and we deduct the 2.5 million of the proposed 8% reduction, and then add back in the 1.6.
Okay, so that's how we're at. That's how you got to that number.
Yes,
there.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman,
I would like to run those numbers though to make sure that I'm correct.
Yeah, that's all right, Mr. Chairman. Another question on that is that. There's a statute out there that says that you have to increase your TANF payments by rate of inflation. And just wondering how that's figuring out, and can you tell me whether that's going up? Or I'm not sure it's going up, but I'm just wondering by how much.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Meyer, I'm going to defer that to Mr. Yaksik. That question.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Senator Meyer, you're correct. There is a statute that gives us a cost of living increase for our TANF clients, and that's been manageable. Our number of clients has been so small. We have around 300 of them. Most of them are youth. So the days of old of 8,000 and 6,000 clients, we're down around 300 clients. So it's maintained a very low number. So the COLA that's in statute has been... is very manageable.
You're speaking.
Mr. Chairman, we've only got 300 or so TANF clients, and I'm trying to figure out where all the rest of the public assistance is going then. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. If I may. Well, our when you look at our caseload across the board, it's food stamps or SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Runs a very high number. Medicaid runs in a high number, and child care. So our benefits specialists are working different programs across the board. And then our TANF block grant, we have different ways that we use to spend that with funding to counties, contracts, Climb Wyoming. So we still spend the block grant every month, We just have to adjust it based on the need of our power program, which is the power assistance program for our TANF clients to help them maintain their monthly expenditures.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been away from labor and health too long. Paul, sit down with you sometime and get educated.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
I'll sit down with you sometime and get educated.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Just that question on escalators. Are there any other escalators in statute that apply to any other parts of your budget?
Go ahead.
Are there other escalators, just the one?
Are there other escalators? You mentioned the TANF escalator.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, no, Mr. Representative Harshman, there are not. We have a session law from around 2000-2001 that maintains our rainy day contingency fund, around $13 million of our TANF reserve. But the rest of that, we spend our block grant every year. I'd say overall it's probably a very minor adjustment to our block grant, but and there's been no other escalators other than the statute that kind of keeps pace with COLA. And they did that a few years ago. So we went from 1996 probably to 2004-2005 without any adjustments to the power program. So the legislature passed that in there, and we do adjust it based on the cost of living.
Talk to me about the $13 million that you've got in as a footnote in a 2000 budget, 2002 or something, and how does it, where is it at, how is it being handled, and tell me a little bit more about that, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, it's a session law. I believe it's in statute that we would hold on to a TANF reserve, and a TANF reserve means that we have a block grant every year from 1997 all the way through. And if we in initial years, we went from 6,000 clients, for example, down to where we are, 300. So the very first few years, it kind of shocked the department to have such an increase, a decrease. So we didn't spend all the TANF money. I think the first year we got $18 million, spent $200,000. So we built a reserve. With the federal government, we draw the funds. We expend state funds first, and then we draw funds for reimbursement. So the federal government keeps the money, and as we spend our state fund, we can go in for reimbursement. Well, obviously, we didn't request reimbursement. We didn't spend all that money. So we had a TANF reserve built up initially, and every year it kept getting bigger. So that's when the legislature built that reserve. They also, in the session law, gave us $1.5 million to go to TANF preschool under Department of Education. $2,289,000 went to workforce services for skills development. And then we had $1,760,500 went to Department of Health for the home infant visitation. That's in the same session law that back in those times. So we've maintained those funding for those three departments, for those three programs, and then we maintain that reserve. So, Mr. Chairman, the federal government has it. We just haven't drawn that money. And if the caseload would escalate high, get back up in 1,000 or 2,000, we have that reserve to draw from.
Are you saying it's federal funds then? Is that what you're saying? Because you said the federal government has it.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. We just haven't drawn it. They have it. And it's on the books for us as a balance.
Okay. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, if I may address a comment to Senator Meyer. Senator Meyer, you had asked about TANF dollars. I was looking for this chart that tells how we spend that $18.5 million block grant or grant money. And I would be happy to provide a copy of this chart to the committee if that would be helpful, so you could see where every dollar is going. It is a small chart, sir.
Yeah, please distribute that to us.
Okay. May we move on, Mr. Chairman?
And Senator Dockstetter, jump in anytime you want. This is your baby. You ready? Okay, please continue.
So I'm trying to remember where we were. I think we were on page 41. Or 30, how about 36? I think we had just covered 36, and maybe I was ready to move to 41.
Okay, we're on 41.
Okay, so page 41 is unit 6016. This is our supplemental nutrition assistance unit, otherwise known as food stamps by most people. We are eliminating one program manager position in the state office. Moving on to page 45, into the budget numbers again. If you look at column number 3, the proposed 8% reduction, you'll see 202,000 there in the 900 series. And this 202,000 was made up of one-time contract funding for special projects, also a modernization study that was conducted and has since been completed, as well as the maintenance for the IRIS system, which is defunct and never came to be. So we're able to eliminate this 202,000. Moving on to page 46, unit 6017. This is our child support enforcement unit.
You know, Mr. Co-Chair,
go ahead.
Before we get too far back on page 43, I had this highlighted, and I just wanted to, where the switch seems to be, just explain that. It looks like a switch from 50-50 to all general fund. Or is that with the IT?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harshman, that is the ET. Yes, IT transfers is part of the ETS consolidation. Paul, do you want to explain?
It's all general fund now. Is that correct, or how does that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, that's correct. We switched the funding.
So that's a net cost to the state, our general fund, then.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Not really. We had some positions that were funded with general fund, and so we can switch the funding between those positions. The general fund was not reduced when we made these switches. We just moved the federal funding. Sorry, was not reduced. We moved it to other positions. Some of the federal funding for other positions was increased, and some was decreased. But we lost. We didn't change any federal funding for this transfer.
The money doesn't change, it just moves across government. Senator Perkins, maybe that wasn't the way to say it. Mr. Chairman, may we move on? Page 46, our child support enforcement unit. We're proposing the elimination of a senior accountant position in this unit. That's also out of the state office. This position has been vacant for a number of months, and before we proposed eliminating that, obviously we went with it vacant to see if we could absorb those roles and responsibilities, and we were able to do so. Moving on to page 49, back into the budget numbers. Column number 3, if you'll drop toward the bottom of that page, in column number 3, you'll see that number $623,600 I mentioned earlier in our presentation, that through the ETS consolidation, we were able to eliminate some external contracts, IT contract positions, and this is 3 IT contractors for a total of $623,000. And then finally, moving over to page 55, this is our early childhood development unit. We had originally proposed 2 position reductions. The governor asked us to reconsider one of those, and we're now using that position as an administrative support position for maintaining and cleaning up the central registry. Mr. Chairman, that concludes the Department of Family Services presentation. If there are any questions, we're happy to entertain them.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you. Excellent presentation, Director Corsi. How many positions did you eliminate altogether?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, 22.
22 positions.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's follow up on that. When you eliminate some of these are federally funded, some of them are state funded, Director Corsi. At what point do we make adjustments should those federal funds go away? That's incredible TANF reserve you have there, but I was noticing as you went through there are several positions that are joint funded. Do we make accommodations for that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, Paul, Mr. Yaksik is in a much better position to talk about the shift between federal and state funding and how we make those accommodations. He's rather magical with the whole thing. But before he addresses that, I did want to point out, and going back to your previous question about position eliminations, so we had originally proposed, when we met with Health and Labor, I believe it was last summer, we had originally proposed 26 reductions. The governor asked us to reconsider 4. We did that, kept those 4, and now we have a net of 22, which, by the way, doesn't count the 24 IT transfers that we made over to ETS. So with the ETS transfers, the department has reduced by 46 positions, not reduced government, but reduced the department by 46, 22 across government. And, Paul, would you like to answer Senator Dockstetter's question on the funding?
Thank you, sir. Senator Dockstetter, you talked about the positions we reduced,
mm-hmm. Yes.
That we eliminated. We eliminated general fund and federal funds. The federal funds were taken down from our appropriation just as the general fund was. Was that your...
Right. But should they continue, like the TANF, we talk about it being in there, well, eventually that could go away based on their financial condition.
Were you mentioning the TANF funds?
Yes. You were talking about that TANF reserve earlier. That's, you've really built that up well, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the TANF funds are a block grant. Realistically, we can't reduce the block grant, so we'll have to make provisions to bring the TANF funds back into the appropriation. We can do that through an exception request in the future, or we can do that through a B-11 process. But the SNAP funding, and those kind of fundings, 4E funding, those are accrual methods. We accrue expenditures. They're reduced from our appropriation. SNAP funding is, if we reduce positions in that unit, we lose the federal funds also, and that's something we took into consideration.
All right. Thank you.
Continue, Dan.
Mr. Chairman, you talked in the very beginning when you went through the 6 different points in the consolidated services. Obviously, that helped to make the cuts, didn't it? Bring it all together. A little thought on that, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Senator Dockstetter, in fact, I know, our first highlight today was that we combined the Juvenile Services and Protective Services Division. There are many things that we could talk about that we've done in the last year in the department to make it more efficient. A result of that consolidation of those two divisions was that a high-level administrator position disappeared. We didn't need two administrators for one division when we put the two divisions together. So we eliminated one of those. One of the other things we did is we recognized that we had, as I mentioned, we were top-heavy. We had too much management. We went through the department. We had, I believe it was 14 manager positions, district manager positions. We reduced those to 9. We realigned. When we did that consolidation, we had, at that point, we had regions, juvenile regions, and we had districts, correct, Paul? Districts in our protective services. The interesting thing was that none of those districts and none of those regions aligned at all with judicial districts across the state, so you really didn't know who was in charge. If you were a judge or a county prosecutor, you didn't know who you were supposed to call for what case. When we put those divisions together, we eliminated 5 manager positions. We went from 14 to 9. We also aligned with judicial districts, so now there's one person in charge of what used to be juvenile and protective services is now social services. If you're a judge or a county prosecutor, you know who to call. Communication lines have opened up. We have much better communication throughout the department and external to the department, part of our focus on customer service.
Mr. Chairman, better communications has saved us a whole lot of money in the process. Mr. Chairman, anyone else? It's impressive, 46 positions total, and you actually in some cases were told to please keep some of these people.
And the other thing, too, is when you biennialize it, most of it will be able to be biennialized. Representative Escobel.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. and Director Corsi. Maybe for my benefit that I'll be presenting your budget is having a one-pager that shows those positions and the funding sources and that. I would like a copy of that. And just to commend you, really. I know this budget pretty well, and it's one of the best-run agencies in the state, Mr. Chairman. And I think finally, to dovetail on some of the comments we heard that about the federal funds, for the committee's knowledge that with what's happening at the federal level, that through sequestration and the Deficit Reduction Act, that a lot of these funds are exempt as well. So.
Representative Esquivel says that to you and congratulates you, then look out because something's coming. No, not really. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a couple of comments?
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Esquivel. I agree with you that this department is, it's an incredible department. Many of the stories are confidential, and obviously this is public testimony. I can't share them, but I am in awe daily almost of the amazing things that happen across the state of Wyoming because of a dedicated group of Department of Family Services employees. I've had two or three of them. I think today is Tuesday. I kind of lose track of days. Forgive me. But I've had two or three in my office in the last couple of days, field workers. In fact, one just a few hours ago to really congratulate her on the great work that she does. The amazing things that she does up in Niobrara County. And I can tell you, I don't know what other directors say, but I've told the governor I have the best leadership team in the state of Wyoming. I'm sure other directors say that they do, but they're wrong. I am right. So it's an amazing department, incredibly dedicated group of professionals, and truly there are thousands of miracles going on across the state because of them.
Chairman, I'm just with... I know you're going to get back to number one on that child support enforcement, too.
Yes, sir.
Okay, committee, anything else? Any other questions? The only other thing I would have, when you did your consolidation and your management scheme, were you able to save on space, rental space, or is that, were you locked in?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for asking. Senator Meyer, did you want to speak?
One thing, eligibility and that cross-compliance with Medicaid. We had some discussions about that last year. I'm not exactly sure where we're at with that in the Department of Health. I think they had another avenue they were going to go. But just wondering how that's coming along as far as that eligibility for Medicaid.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, I'll address your question first, Mr. Chairman, and then Senator Meyer's question about Medicaid eligibility. With regard to your question about the consolidation and I believe that was a reference to commercial space. Part of our reductions were eliminating a couple of commercial contracts. One of those, and I'm hoping that Mr. Yaksik will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. One of those was, they were both here in Cheyenne. One of those was for $114,000 a year lease, and the other one was for $116,000 a year. That would be a total of $230,000 a year. Is that correct, Mr. Yaksik? That we were able to eliminate. And that obviously $250,000 a year in my book is real money, so annually. And then moving to Senator Meyer's question about Medicaid eligibility, we are shifting Medicaid eligibility back to the Department of Health. The rationale for that is that the Department of Health administers the Medicaid program. They write the policy, they write the rules, and our eligibility specialists had the responsibility for carrying that out. That was cumbersome and logistically a bit of a nightmare. We've started transferring those responsibilities with long-term care, which is a small portion of the Medicaid program. That's been fairly successful. There were a couple of bumps, but those are just opportunities to get better. And we should have all Medicaid cases transferred. I believe it's the 1st of October of this year. Medicaid will move back to the Department of Health, the eligibility on that. As long as I'm on along that line, I'd like to point out also that as part of our restructuring some things within the department. We have also recently moved in the direction of specialized child care eligibility workers, and I think Senator Perkins will like to hear this for those child care providers, that child care providers and parents getting benefits, getting subsidies for their children will now be handled by specialized workers who will have very distinct timelines and should get that done much faster and in a much more accurate way than we have in the past.
Go ahead.
So I guess as we move Medicaid eligibility out of your shop to the health, we're probably going to see some realignment of personnel, and I guess kind of keep us up to speed on that as you go forward. So we know how many stick in yours and how many they want, and we don't get a little creep there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, we to date have moved 12 positions as part of that Medicaid realignment. Heather Babbitt is the administrator for our Economic Assistance Division, and she was recently a couple of times in my office saying, Steve, as we move all those Medicaid cases over, it's going to dwindle the need for our workforce. Some of that will be picked up in Medicaid, but it's also going to be a much more modern system. We will keep the committee apprised of those developments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
True.
Yes, thank you for letting me know that. I know we've been trying to connect so we can talk about that a little bit further on the child care issue. But with respect to if I understood what you just said, for example, I know that in Casper, you go up there and there's about three ladies that work for DFS, that's went in and that's how you qualified to made your application for Medicaid assistance for nursing home care for elderly. And those individuals now, that entire function is now going to be is in the process of being transferred over to the Department of Health and those along with those individuals?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, for Medicaid, that is correct.
Okay.
All the Medicaid eligibility functions they've already started transitioning over. I forget how many thousands of cases it is that they have right now. 6,000, Paul? Is it something like that? Something like that. 6,000, 6,500 cases have moved over to the Department of Health so far, and the rest of those cases will move over by, I believe it's the 1st of October. They plan to go live with that new eligibility platform, and it might be the end of December. I'll promise you the end of the calendar year, maybe not the 1st of October. How's that?
Thank you. And if I follow up on one more, Mr. Chairman, along that line, and maybe it doesn't affect you because of this kind of transfer and realignment between the Department of Health and Department of Family Services, but as you guys look at the potential for expansion of Medicaid from the ACA, does that affect, do you see any effects of that on your department one way or the other?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we've not seen any effect or any potential effect on our department. I wouldn't dare speak for the Medicaid division over at the Department of Health.
Right, and
I'd
be happy sometimes as we look at the potential for Medicaid expansion, it kind of weaves itself through various departments of federal government. And now that the Medicaid compliance or the Medicaid application of process for seniors is going back to Department of Health, I can't think of how that would particularly affect yours, but I just want to double check with you.
No, sir, I'm not aware, nor is Mr. Yaksik of any
okay
impacts on us.
Thank you.
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, just really quick, as we close, for the benefit of the committee, some institutional history on Director Corsi. Took a series of mental health services offices in Jackson and Pinedale, Star Valley, and Evanston. Took them from a nonprofit situation where they weren't making any money, brought them in under budget, and did it by doing it with a lot less government money. He made him profitable, so whatever he touches, he seems to have a touch of success to it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else have anything nice to say about DFS? No, I'm only kidding. Good job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did see Representative Gingrey on the way over to this committee meeting, and he did suggest that we let the committee know that House Judiciary loves DFS. If that has any weight.
It doesn't, but it's noted. Anything else for DFS? Thank you very much. Good job. Well done. We appreciate it. You don't need to have a callback. Okay, members of committee. before we all scatter. It's going to start probably Thursday, right, Mr. Co-Chair? So be thinking about callbacks, or if there are any. Tomorrow will probably be the last day. Don, who do we have coming back?
Mr. Chairman, right now we have the Wyoming Retirement System, and you also received a governor's letter during this relative to the retirement system, which will be circulated shortly.
Yeah, and I think we'll – Steve, do you want to talk about those governor's letter maybe tomorrow or –
Well, I just, Mr. Co-Chair, have everybody's got tomorrow's schedule, I think. I have WD, you have Department of Health in the morning. We have that, and DOT. But then the callback in the afternoon after Miners Hospital, we have retirement. And then we thought we'd take some time and go over the governor's letters and then see if we've got these biennialized cuts between you and Brett. Maybe somehow closer. We'll just go with your numbers, Don.
I'll buy you guys a dinner at Taco Time if you can get together.
Dinner at Taco Time, yeah. So that was kind of the plan for tomorrow. Were there any other? I think your question.
Anybody else here have anybody they want to call back? Anybody?
Health Department of Health? That's tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, some of us have our schedules, Senator Meyer. We're trying to keep you in the dark.
Do we have
Senator Representative Nicholas?
Is there, before we actually started going through the markup, I was just wondering if there was some type of where we sit down and show us kind of the process that, that you use, and if we got a top dollar and work down, or how we can.
We will have a dry run possibly tomorrow.
Good. Yeah, can we do that, Don? That'd
we'll
be
just
good.
Have a dummy bill, and we can cut the heck out of it and get used to it. Or something like that. Yeah, let's do that tomorrow, Don. Let's just go through it for everybody because it's going to get fast and furious for all of us.
Then we can hit the ground running on Thursday a little better.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's very good. We also have some additional handouts for you that categorizes all of the increases. We have a single motion that is prepared. It's 4 or 5 pages long. That would address all of ETS if you want to do it in one swoop.
Perfect.
We've already talked about doing that.
Address.
Yeah. Anybody else, anything on what we're going to try to do the rest of the week? The idea is to have markups Thursday and be done by Friday. I don't want to go into the weekend unless some of you do, and I don't particularly want to go till midnight on Friday, so let's we'll try to work through it. Anything else? 8 o'clock tomorrow, Steve? Senator Perkins. Well, I think we just want to, any questions we might have. I don't know if there was a specific thing. Was there?
What I have, Mr. Co-Chair, is the Medicaid expansion and the health insurance exchange issues. Don, what else do you have coming in?
Mr. Chairman, they were here for an extended period in December, but realistically they only had about 30 minutes to discuss their $19 million in budget reductions, so that may be another area of potential inquiry. They're prepared to speak to that.
Yeah, and that's one of your budgets too, Senator Perkins. Did anybody have any questions on Craig or the goldenrod that we put out? Would you put that out yesterday? Anybody have any questions on that? Okay. Representative Wallace.
I didn't bring that back in with me, but I did want to kind of I was curious about the 50-cent a ton increase on coal for the entire forecast when we're seeing 18% down in price and 9% down in production this past year, and how Craig came to that conclusion.
Don?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, the production has dropped off pretty dramatically, in the neighborhood of 10%, depending on what time period you look at. The spot prices have also declined dramatically. However, the contract prices have not. We have not experienced a decline in contracts, and we were at a point where our current forecast was anywhere from 70 to 90 cents a ton low.
So we were getting an increasing differential in terms of our forecast versus the revenues that we were collecting, which helped us because we also had an increasing differential on natural gas going the opposite direction, particularly in production, but also somewhat in our price forecast. So our attempt was to bring both of those into line. It's essentially a wash after you do all that at $900,000 out of a couple of billion dollars of federal mineral royalties and severance taxes over the biennium. So it's essentially a wash, and it's an attempt to correlate those with a little bit closer recognition of the tax returns that have been submitted over the past year.
Okay. Senate Appropriations Committee, tomorrow at noon, I'm sure you've got the notification, we're going to have a committee meeting that hasn't gone out to you yet. We're going to do one re-referral, and then we're going to do the AML bill and the school cap comp tomorrow, probably 30 minutes after we adjourn for lunch, just for your information. You haven't got that notification yet? Yeah, I thought you'd seen it. No, we're going to meet in our S13. So anything you need, go ahead and take there. I think you're meeting tomorrow at noon here, aren't you?
We have caucus.
Yeah, okay. I guess we could meet down here. I think I sent out the, well, I think of the 3 p.m. We've already done the 3 p.m. where we're meeting, so it's set. Okay. We're adjourned.